Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear from Mario Ritter and Jill Robbins. Later, Anna Mateo will bring us this week's health report. But first, here is Mario Ritter.
The American Secretary of State Rex Tillerson says North Korea could signal that it is ready for talks by halting its missile tests. On Monday, Tillerson said, "We've not had an extended period of time where they have not taken some type of provocative action by launching ballistic missiles." The top U.S. diplomat went on to say that the strongest signal North Korea could send would be to just stop these missile launches. Tillerson spoke in Manila, the Philippines, where he was taking part in a meeting of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. His comments follow a United Nations Security Council vote on Saturday. All members of the Council, including China and Russia, voted to place additional sanctions on North Korea for its missile tests on July 4th and 28th. China, a North Korean ally, urged the country to halt its missile and nuclear tests, saying the North should not provoke international society's goodwill. The vote, Tillerson said, showed that the international community finds North Korea's actions unacceptable. He said he hoped that North Korea would choose a different pathway that would enable talks in the future. "When the conditions are right, then we can sit and have a dialogue around the future of North Korea, so that they feel secure and prosper economically," he said. In a statement late Sunday, the White House said President Donald Trump spoke to South Korea's President Moon Jae-in by telephone. The statement said the two leaders agreed that they would fully carry out the sanctions. They urged the international community to do so as well. They also agreed that North Korea poses a grave threat to their countries and Japan. On Monday, the North Korean government denounced the new UN restrictions. North Korean state-operated media said the North threatened to take revenge on the U.S. Through its media, North Korea also restated its position that sanctions will not force it to negotiate over its nuclear program. The country also threatened to take an action of justice, although it did not say what that would be. The sanctions approved by the UN Security Council aim to cut about $1 billion from North Korea's $3 billion in yearly export income. The resolution says the move is to punish North Korea for using its economic gains to develop its weapons program. The U.S. ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley, said the resolution was the single largest economic sanctions package ever leveled against North Korea. And the top U.S. diplomat for Asia Susan Thornton, noted the importance of China continuing to carry out the sanctions. I'm Mario Ritter.
Since Donald Trump was elected president, the number of churches in the United States declaring themselves sanctuaries or safe places for undocumented immigrants has more than doubled. However, few people are taking refuge in them. After Trump's victory last November, about 400 churches declared themselves sanctuaries. That brought the total number of sanctuary churches in the country to 800, according to the nonprofit group Church World Service. The rise came after Trump said he wanted to deport millions of undocumented people from the United States. However, many undocumented immigrants say they consider taking refuge in the churches a risky move. Only 12 people are known to be taking refuge in these churches. Ray Ibarra Maldonado is an immigration lawyer in Phoenix, Arizona. He represents Mexican-born Guadalupe Garcia de Rajos. She was one of the first undocumented immigrants deported under Trump. He says people who choose to take sanctuary in churches are strong-willed. He calls such a decision a personal sacrifice to make a larger statement towards immigration law. It's not just about an individual staying here. It's something much bigger than that, he said. Nuri Chavarria is originally from Guatemala. She has 4 children. She is the most recent immigrant to publicly take sanctuary in a church. This week, she was given a stay of deportation. That is when an order of deportation is temporarily delayed. She had spent 6 nights in the Iglesia de Dios Pentecostal in New Haven, Connecticut. Chavarria has no criminal record. She was previously given a stay of removal for humanitarian reasons, says Khalid Walls, a spokesman for U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. Chavarria applied for asylum many years ago, but her application was denied. This June, ICE federal officials told her she had 1 month to leave the country and return to Guatemala. Undocumented immigrants like Chavarria, who take sanctuary, never have promises of safety from deportation. However, ICE policy does discourage arrests at sensitive locations. This includes churches. The idea of sanctuary is an old one. It comes from an ancient Judeo-Christian tradition. Today, some religious communities offer refuge to protest federal immigration policy. Yet immigrants do not always wish to accept churches' offer of sanctuary. Garcia de Rajos, for example, decided against taking sanctuary in a church, her lawyer said. Maldonado, the lawyer, said taking sanctuary is almost like being incarcerated. You can't live the life you want to live. Garcia de Rajos followed the immigration rules. She knew deportation was likely. She was arrested when she arrived at her ICE check-in in February. In the past, many immigrants had regular check-in meetings with ICE. They went to such meetings without fearing deportation. Under other administrations, undocumented people were not likely to be deported if they did not have a criminal record or were important to their community. Chavarria decided to take sanctuary so she could stay with her children, says Kika Matos, the director of immigrant rights at the Center for Community Change. The center represents Chavarria in court. Chavarria received attention from Connecticut's two Democratic senators, Chris Murphy and Richard Blumenthal, as well as Governor Daniel Malloy. They all wanted to support her. Another undocumented immigrant, Jeanette Vizguera, also took sanctuary in a church. She spent 86 nights in a church in Denver, Colorado, before her application for a stay of deportation was approved in May. Colorado Senator Michael Bennett and two other Democratic congressmen introduced a law that permitted her and another immigrant to remain in the United States until 2019. While Vizguera was in sanctuary, Time magazine named her one of the most influential people of 2017. The media attention was helpful for Vizguera, Maldonado says. The more high profile you can make your case, the more you can show the government that the rest of the world is watching, he said. Vizguera and Chavarria, however, are exceptions. There are currently 12 immigrants known to be living in churches. They are all hoping for some form of relief from deportation. But so far, they have not received any. This may discourage others from taking sanctuary. Noel Anderson works on immigrants' rights at Church World Service. There's a lot of fear in the community, Anderson said. The fear is that they could be stuck in a church for years on end, or if their story is public, they may be more of a target. I'm Jill Robbins.
Han Hyun-min is a 16-year-old South Korean model. He has lived in Seoul all his life and only speaks Korean. But people in South Korea often think he is from somewhere else. Han's mother is Korean and his father is Nigerian. He is the first Black Korean model to take part in South Korea's fashion shows.
Agence France-Presse news agency spoke with Han and his agent Yun Bong last month. An agent is someone who helps models get jobs by contacting fashion designers and magazines. Yun signed Han as a model after seeing Han's Instagram photos and his electrifying walk, AFP reported. However, he knew that signing Han was a risky move because of his darker skin. A dark-skinned fashion model like Han was unheard of in South Korea, Yun told AFP.
At first, many Korean fashion designers and magazines dismissed Han and Yun because of Han's dark skin. But a few designers liked his looks. Since he started modeling, Han has been in more than 30 fashion shows during two Seoul Fashion Weeks. That is a high number for a beginner. Despite Han's success, people still question whether he is Korean. That is something that many Koreans with dark skin experience.
Lily Lee is from South Korea. She has two daughters named Yuri and Dasomi. Her children are biracial. Lee's husband, James, is from Kenya. Lee publishes videos on YouTube about her biracial family. Lee said James was the first black person that she and her parents ever met. She said her mother did not want her to marry James. She was always like, just date, but don't think about getting married, Lee said of her mother. Lee said her parents worried that if she had children with James, the children would have a difficult life. She said the reason that they were being against our relationship was because our children will be discriminated against, definitely, because the skin color and also James is from Africa.
In Korea, people often stared at Lee's daughters. She said, "It is hard since I look different from them." One of Lee's daughters once told her that she wished she had a yellow face like her mother. "I don't think she hates her skin," Lee said. "It's just she wanted to be like me." In 2012, Lee and her family moved to the United States for her husband's education.
Foreigners make up less than 4% of South Korea's population. Africans and African Americans are a small percentage of South Korea's foreign-born population. Kiana Robinson lives in South Korea with her family. She and her husband have taught English in Daejeong for 7 years. They are African American. Robinson said that her family has experienced racism in South Korea, but she said it is usually because of ignorance or a lack of knowledge and experience. She said the only time most Koreans have ever seen a black person is on television. Because of that, she says, many Koreans view Africans as poor and African Americans as violent.
Robinson said that in Korea, people are considered either Korean or foreign. Lee said that having Korean blood is very important in South Korea. Someone who is not Korean by blood is seen as the other, she explained. "We are proud of being just one tribe, one blood," Lee said. "If you see someone else looking different, then he can't be Korean. He can't be Korean. They're just not Korean, basically."
South Korea is a very modern country with a strong economy. According to the Financial Times, it also has a highly educated population. This has led to a shortage of unskilled workers in the country. In order to fill factory jobs, South Korea gives visas to workers from Asian and African countries. Lee said foreigners in South Korea with darker skin often work in factories, while foreigners with lighter skin often work as English teachers. She said many Korean people make judgments about people based on their skin tones.
Robinson said people with darker skin in South Korea experience discrimination. She said some companies only want to hire people who are lighter skinned. That gives people with darker skin fewer chances to get a good job. Yoon Bum, Han Hyun Min's agent, told AFP that many designers and magazines would tell him, "We don't do dark-skinned models." Or, "For us, non-Korean models means white models with blue eyes and blonde hair." Both Lee and Robinson have traveled to many other countries. They both said that South Korea is not the only country where people view darker skin negatively.
Lee is not raising her daughters in South Korea. However, when her family visits South Korea, she said people often bring attention to her daughters' appearances. They mostly react positively. However, she said, they don't think that they can be Korean. Like, there has to be something else, you know, not Korean. Lee said she hopes people can change their thoughts about what it means to be Korean. And she hopes that the idea of Koreanness can include biracial Koreans too.
Lee said Han Hyun-min, as South Korea's first biracial model, is leading the way. I feel like he identifies himself more culturally and everything like being Korean, she said. And she hopes that Han's Korean identity will cause people to actually accept more and more biracial people, she said.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. World Breastfeeding Week is an annual celebration held during the first week in August in more than 120 countries. The celebration aims to raise awareness about the health and economic benefits of breastfeeding. One goal of this year's event is to encourage governments to support workplace policies that help mothers breastfeed their babies for as long as possible. Another goal is to confirm that breastfeeding is normal and natural. In 2016, The Lancet published a series on breastfeeding. The Lancet claimed that deaths of 823,000 children and 20,000 mothers each year could be averted through universal breastfeeding, along with economic savings of $300 billion. The Medical Journal also reported in 2016 that the United Kingdom had the lowest rate of breastfeeding in the world. In that country, only 1 in 200 mothers breastfeed their babies until the children are 1 year old. That is only about 0.5%. Carmel Lloyd is with Royal College of Midwives in the UK. She says that in the UK, many people do not accept breastfeeding, or as she says, breastfeeding is frowned upon.
Well, I think it is about sort of like normalising it. I think it's still very much from, you know, some aspects of society very much frowned upon.
In the US, 27% of mothers were still breastfeeding after 1 year. The number is 35% in Norway and 44% in Mexico. The Lancet reported that breastfeeding rates are much higher in much of the developing world. Nearly 100% in Senegal, Gambia, and Malawi. Many doctors recommend that babies be breastfed because the milk and closeness to the mother provide health benefits for newborns. Experts say breastfeeding allows a mother to share her immune protection with her baby. In countries with poor water quality especially, breastfeeding protects a newborn from dangerous infections. Breastfeeding might benefit not just the child. In recent years, researchers have also been studying the health benefits of breastfeeding for the mother. A new study found that women who breastfed may have lowered their risk of heart disease or stroke by an average of 10% when they became older. The study is a collaboration between researchers at the Chinese Academy of Medical Sciences at Peking University and the University of Oxford. They studied data on nearly 290,000 women. The average age of these women was 51. The researchers found that women who breastfed had a 9% lower risk of heart disease and an 8% decreased risk of stroke. These percentages are in comparison to women who had never breastfed. The benefit of breastfeeding was even greater for women who nursed their babies for 2 years or more. Their heart disease risk was 18% lower and the risk of stroke 17% less than for those women who did not breastfeed. Cardiologist Nisa Goldberg suggests the cardiovascular benefits may be related to the release of a hormone during breastfeeding. That hormone is oxytocin. Oxytocin is important because it tells a pregnant woman's body to start contractions when it's time for her baby to be born. Oxytocin also tells her body to create milk to feed the child. Goldberg, who was not involved in the study, explains.
And oxytocin is a hormone that helps the flexibility of our blood vessels. And flexible blood vessels are resistant to the buildup of plaque or the cholesterol in the walls of the arteries.
The researchers published their findings in the Journal of the American Heart Association. Goldberg, a medical director for the Joan H. Tisch Center for Women's Health in New York City, points out a possible problem with the study. It was observational, she says. In other words, it used information provided by the mothers many years after they gave birth. Goldberg adds, the findings do not prove a clear cause and effect relationship between breastfeeding and heart disease. She says a different type of study is needed. She says health experts need to compare women who breastfeed directly with a control group of those who don't. In this way, they can perhaps confirm long-term heart-healthy benefits that come from breastfeeding. In addition, all the reported health benefits for both the mother and baby may give some women who can't or won't breastfeed pressure or feelings of guilt. Rebecca Branch, a mother, agrees.
There can be a lot of pressure. You're made to feel quite a lot of pressure to breastfeed, and if for some reason you can't or don't want to, there can be some negative responses around that.
Whether mothers breastfeed or not, cardiologist Nisa Goldberg advises that women can protect themselves from heart disease in other ways too.
For those women who don't choose to breastfeed, there are other things they can do to prevent heart disease. And that's certainly by exercising, something as simple as taking a walk and eating a healthy diet that's rich in fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and low-fat protein.
And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.